Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi everybody, and welcome back to another year of Serious Issues, an occasional comic book podcast, but also sometimes it's manga. And yes, I'm pronouncing it differently this year. It's my New Year's resolution to pronounce manga or manga different every single year. My name is Andrew Levins, and joining me today, my very special guest who joins me to talk about manga and manga only, Connor Stevens.
I have no other identity, but it is lovely to be here.
You do have another identity. You are one of the hosts of the podcast Wine Mums, a just above monthly podcast. It's like every 3 weeks. Is that your schedule?
Sometimes it was like quarterly for a bit there.
It's more regular than Serious Issues is at this point.
Yeah, true. We united on that front. We like to keep them waiting. Yeah.
So happy New Year to everyone listening and Connor. Our New Year's gift to you is us spending the next amount of time discussing all the manga that we've read in the last couple months since we last caught up. And we have some big names at the start. So if you're like one of those people that is just allergic to the very idea of reading something from Japan, we're gonna come out the gate with some big heavy hitters that maybe you will want to pay attention to, because one of the biggest, if not the biggest, manga series of all time just to hit a massive milestone, and that is chapter 1000 of One Piece, by, I always forget his first name. His second name is Oda, or it's his first name if you live in Japan.
I know it. I don't know how to say it unless I fuck it up. Ichiro?
Yeah, I know, me too.
Ichiro? Something like that. There's an E and a couple of I's in there.
Yeah, yeah. You would think after reading 1,000 chapters of this man's manga, we would at least know how to say his name properly. I know how to spell it. it's E-double-I-C-H-I-R-O, and that's the last we'll say of his name. He is Oda, or some people refer to him as Goda, as in like God, because he is the god of shonen manga, and One Piece is his extremely long-running series. It's been going on since the late 90s, just hit the first issue of Shonen Jump for 2021 included the 1,000th chapter of One Piece, it was Connor actually who was one of the handful of people that started prodding me in the back a couple years ago, like, hey, you know, you should really read One Piece one day.
We definitely specified in the shortest amount of time humanly possible.
Yeah, you should affect all of your relationships in this world by reading One Piece as quickly as you can. Just over 2 years ago, I read it. I loved it. It became probably my favorite media franchise. I managed to be very lucky at the end of 2019. I had a trip to Japan and I went to the One Piece Tokyo Tower attraction, and I got to take selfies with highly detailed plastic models of all of my favorite characters from the series, and got to play a bunch of dumb pirate games. And because of COVID, that thing is shut down forever.
Yeah, what the fuck? Never get to go.
Yeah. I'm very grateful that I spent an afternoon there and watched a live, a One Piece play entirely in Japanese that I couldn't understand any of, but I loved every moment of it. One Piece as a story, Told through the art form of manga, not so much anime, is just an absolute joy to me, and has been something that you've been reading for obviously far longer than I have, Connor. How long have you been reading One Piece?
5 years now. I thought it was shorter than that, but no, 6 years this year.
Wow. Happy birthday to you reading One Piece.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'm the pros, you know.
And the funniest thing about this is that, like, given that, like, by the time I caught up on One Piece, it was only at the Wano arc, and they are still in the Wano arc. And I think if you go all the way back 6 years to when you started reading, they were probably only in, like, Dressrosa then, right? Which is only, like, an arc and a half before this one. So what seems like, you know, a small blip in terms of story was many, many, you know, years ago. It's crazy how much story there has been and how much time has passed since this story. I don't know, you kind of get lost in the real time of the manga and then how much time it has taken Oda to produce it.
Yeah, I still don't know how that man does weekly outside of, like, the several reports of him being hospitalized every year. But
yeah, it's brutal. Yeah, I remember that was like, yeah, he got hospitalized last year. And everyone was like, don't worry, it's not COVID. He's just exhausted like he always is because he creates one of the greatest manga series almost every week. So yeah, chapter 1000 is kind of like I guess a lot of people thought it was going to be the end of the Wano arc. We should say, you know, One Piece is a story. It's a pirate story about Luffy, a you know, typical shonen dumbass who wants to be king of the pirates. And he's eaten a gum fruit, which allows him to stretch his body to all shapes and sizes because he is a man made of rubber now. And he meets different characters on his journeys. Some of them join his crew. Some of them he fights for many, many chapters. And then they come back again as friends. Everyone says, like, oh, we're finally heading towards, like, the end of this series, but it still feels like it's many, many years away from seeing the end written. But they're currently in a, like classical Japan setting. Do you know which era it's referencing exactly?
I don't, sorry, but I'm sure it's very interesting to find out.
Just say, like, I mean, pre-feudal, I guess you could say. Is it feudal Japan or pre-feudal?
It'd have to be feudal. I'd say feudal. Right?
Yeah, feudal. So I guess like 1600. Yeah. And so yeah, they're in a very, like, you know, classical Japan setting of an island now, and he's going up against one of the biggest threats he's ever gone up against. He is a warlord. One of the few warlords of the sea, and he's going up against two of them at once. His name is Kaido, Emperor Kaido. Wait, Luffy himself is I'm terrible. For someone that's read 1,000 of this, I should know these facts better. So don't come at me, the three people who listen to this podcast that read One Piece. He's going up against an emperor, right?
Yeah, Emperor Kaido, who may also be a warlord of the sea, maybe.
I don't know. Whatever. But so it's like, I guess we've been witnessing basically Luffy running for about 30 chapters. And the various members of his crew fighting different underlings of Kaido. And this began the big fight, which continued this week with chapter 1001, with Luffy and a few other pirates up against Kaido and another emperor, Big Mom. Connor, are you loving this as much as you ever have?
This is like my favorite arc, I'm pretty sure. There's so many I love, and I think I do love all of them at one point, but
I think Water 7 and Marineford are like my top two, and this could absolutely be in the top three with them.
Yeah, I think like this might just be like number one. I've read it from start to finish, like this arc alone just hit different points, both of kind of being lost because there's so much going on, and just because I love it so much, just start at the back of the arc and work the way through it. This Wano is just such a rich setting, both because you can do all that cool feudal Japan shit, but it's really like, there's probably still 10 years to go, surely, but we're so in the end game that they're just throwing so much lore at you as well, and there's about a million characters who are all deciding to show up, or they're in prison together. And I think before that, my favorite arc was actually, one of my favorites was Impel Down, just that sort of really closed off Luffy punching up people in a prison.
But yeah, cool. I include that as part, like, I think it's like a two, that and the one after it make up Marineford, right?
Yeah.
Impel Down, I love. Impel Down, him fighting his way out of the jail. That's the most addicted to One Piece I ever was. Like, I don't think I slept that night until I finished the arc.
Till Bon Clay got his proper send-off.
Damn, bring him back. Of all characters to come back, I want Bon Clay back. But yeah, I mean, I guess this is not so much like us reviewing chapter 1000 of One Piece, but it's just us saying, hey, if you've ever like considered reading it, but you're like, hey, I don't know if the 1000 chapter investment is worth it. It absolutely is. To say that like this current arc is both of our favorites, like one of our favorites, is insane considering how long he's been making this story for, and for it to still be this good when so many other shonen manga have come close to this. Like, you know, I feel like celebrated manga like Bleach becomes less and less celebrated the higher up you get, where like it's series like that definitely hit like what seems like an endpoint but then keep going. This is the manga that no one ever wants to end.
Yeah, and it just...
Would you agree?
And I think what's amazing about this chapter, specific chapter 1000, is what I expected was like a big lore dump, like you're about to hit something big and everything's about to go off and it will change the way we read One Piece forever. But this was kind of like the most pure Luffy punches someone in the face and says the line, and that's kind of the issue.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Despite everything, it's still that. It hasn't ever lost that charm.
It was a celebration of Luffy. You know, that you had a little bit of lore about the D in Luffy's name. That was the extent of the lore you got. But mostly it was just him, yeah, like you know, looking out for his friends and punching someone much bigger than him in the face.
Making sure they know he would be king of the pirates.
I mean, I'd forgotten, so it was good to get a reminder. So that's One Piece 1000, which can be found, you know, on bookshelves in every single bookshop. I think if anyone stocks any manga, there was always a volume or two of One Piece there. We both read it on the Shonen Jump app, which is an extremely cheap price to pay a month to get all the new series and old series in the Shonen Jump vault. And one of the series that we really enjoyed last year that came to an end, or so they say, is a series called Chainsaw Man. Connor, when I first told you about Chainsaw Man, you were like, oh, don't read that. It's crap. It's really bad. Don't do it. And then curiosity got the better of me when I went like shonen manga crazy. And I started reading the first few chapters and I was like, yeah, he's right. It is pretty crap. But I'm going to keep reading. And I fell in love with it so fast. Just this like, absolutely insane manga by Fujimoto Tatsuki. And it was a few weeks of me and I know a few others in your life being like, Chainsaw Man's pretty good, hey. Chainsaw Man's actually the best, hey. And the second half of last year, you caught up and we were able to read the finale in tandem. Chainsaw Man is a book about another absolute dumbass shonen protagonist who has a demon within him that he can summon, and his demon is just like chainsaws on every limb and a big chainsaw like jumps out of his face, and it's him being him working for the government essentially to rid the world of demons. But there's so much insane plot developments, you can't really like stay a fan of a character for too long because they die extremely quickly, and there's just a lot of blood and insanity in every chapter. I think, you know, where a lot of shonen manga and like superhero stories in general, you can kind of guess what's going to happen next. Chainsaw Man is one of the most unpredictable stories I've ever read. And I found the finale so satisfying. Connor?
Where to start with this one? I think what I love about it most is you'd read it and you're like, why is this in Shonen Jump? Is this really a shonen manga? But at the same time, it's just insanity and its power system and its willingness to just accept death at every turn is almost not like a deconstruction is the right word, but those...
No, I'm with you on that.
And it just like, it uses that to be the best story it could possibly be.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I feel like there were moments where I'm like, oh, this is a comment on the state of shonen manga. Because like I really want to read the previous series by Fujimoto, which is
Fire Punch.
Yeah, I saw it on a bookshelf the other day and almost bought the first volume, but I have too much of my reading list to get through first. But yeah, I loved how like it would sometimes be so on the nose, like a typical shonen, like hype yourself up for a fight, but then the next chapter would be like, oh, our hero is like in pieces now, and someone's like laughing over him while he makes a joke about being horny. And like it was, which itself is also pretty tropey when it comes to shonen, but it would just kind of blends them all together in such an insane way that I found it really refreshing and cool.
Yeah, it kind of even, because it's just about like some guy who wants to touch boobs for the start of it, and then you realize that's like a weirdly, eventually kind of like a weirdly inspiring. Okay, it's not quite the right word, but it becomes poignant about like what we look for in life and purpose, and the fact that it's just this dumbass who eventually finds friends and love in this terrible, horrible world with one of the best
because his real motivation,
I think we've seen in
his real motivation. Oh, absolutely, we can get back to her in a moment. But one of his main motivations, Denji's main motivations, is he just wants to be loved, and like to him, love means like not having to like, you know, starve and eat a good meal, but also I guess love also means being able to touch a boob every now and then, you know. But yeah, the villain, and we won't spoil who that is in case no one has ever read it, the moment where you realize who the villain is, it rocks, dude. It just rocks. And I found like their ultimate fight just so fun and satisfying. So we know that like Chainsaw Man, as we currently have been reading it the last 2 years, is over. But the story is continuing in Shonen Jump Plus. Is that right?
Yes. That's like the one where it's purely online and they can sort of set their own schedule.
Yeah, there's less pressure on the mangaka to have to produce it weekly. So, second part starts. It's going to be called School Arc. And it features Denji going to school with a younger demon. I'm very excited for it. We don't know when it's coming, but that's going to be really fun when it does. And I imagine that'll be on the Shonen Jump app as well, because what's it called? Spy
X Family.
Spy Family.
And Kaiju.
Spy Family. And yeah, they're both Shonen Jump Plus ones. So yeah, it's cool.
What's really cool too with that is, like, it's a gorgeous manga. There's no denying that. And some of, like, the paneling and action are incredible.
Yeah.
But it is, like, genuinely... Step down's not the right word, but from Fire Punch, there's definitely a difference between someone who had to adapt to drawing weekly compared to monthly. And
right, sure.
And it, like, Fire Punch is just so gorgeous. I'm so excited to see what this set, this, like, paneling set, this, like, power setting and everything established so far will look like when there's just all the time in the world for him to draw elaborate paneling of chainsaws becoming boxes.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I mean, Fujimoto's done a stack of one shots in the past, which I would love, I hope, for Viz to collect at some point in the future. But yeah, I think Fire Punch is now being released. There's like 8 volumes of it in the West. I don't know if they're all, have they all come out yet? Yes, they've all come out.
I think so, yeah.
They all came out.
The series came out like a few years ago, weirdly.
The final volume came out in October 2019. So there's been plenty of time for me to read all of it, Connor. All right, I'm just lazy.
Read 3 volumes and it was so depressing. I was like, all right, I'll come back to this one day.
I'll come back to this during a year that isn't as terrible as the manga. So that is Demon Slayer. No, it isn't. It's Chainsaw Man. what's next on our list? Oh, we're going to change things up. We're going to change this up to a gift that Connor sent to me last year of one of their absolute favorite manga series of all time. Sorry, anime series as well of all time. Revolutionary Girl Utena, which is... it started in the early 90s, is that right?
Yeah, 96, 7, I think, something like that. Yes, yeah, 7.
So it's written and drawn by Chiho Saito. And it's like based on a concept by B. Pappas, who are best known for their work on Sailor Moon. And I mean, this is like,
not quite.
As far as like nine.
I don't want to interject there and be.
Oh, please do. Like, please interject. I get everything wrong, so please.
It was Kuniko Ikuhara who ran the like second to fourth seasons of the Sailor Moon TV show, who then left. And was like, okay, I'm going to start my own independent anime studio, and got Chiho Sato and I think like 3 people from who do we even get in? Gainax. And they were just like, all right, here's Revolutionary Girl Ultima, this multimedia project that we're all going to work out of this shop we bought in Tokyo.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. So, okay, I didn't realize. Yeah, because it's so funny that, like, yeah, Beer Papas or Beer Papas. Beer
Papas.
Yeah, I don't know. I love that they are this, like, weird little collective. Yeah, and you have, like, you have a manga artist, an animator, a character designer, a script writer, and a planner. And so Revolutionary Girl Utena starts as a manga series and quickly gets bought as an anime series.
Also not quite it was like the same time. Like, they all just were in this one office and, like, we're going to release at the same time, and they wrote it together, all five of them, and did everything for her. And they're like, all right, Shiho Sato, you're going to write this manga and you're going to tell this version of the story that you're writing as a manga. And Ikuhara is like, this anime is going to be sort of how we tell this version of the story. And there's also a movie which came after the anime, which also, like, a different sort of telling of it, but they all kind of work together from, like, this one.
Yeah, and then there's a manga, then there's a manga adaptation of the movie.
Damn, I haven't read that. I failed.
The Adolescence of Utena. That's it. That's in the collection you gave me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's crazy. So I have read so much Revolutionary Girl Utena in the last fortnight. I knew it was, like, so these beautiful volumes that Viz released. The hardcover shit is just, it's so gorgeous. And, like reasonably, like, well-priced as well, considering the quality of the printing and the covers and how many color pages there are. It comes in, like, this big box. There's a poster. There's two volumes of it. The first book has most of the main Revolutionary Girl Utena story, and then a couple of backups. Then the second book has the rest of the main story, a couple of backups, and then it has Adolescence of Utena, which is the adaptation of the movie. But what's crazy is that, like, yeah, you have, like, the manga of Revolutionary Girl Utena, which tells the same story as the anime of Revolutionary Girl Utena. Then they sum it up in the movie Adolescence of Utena, which is, like, essentially telling the same story except a bit more succinctly. And then the manga adaptation of Adolescence of Utena. So there are four different ways that you can enjoy the story. Which is your favorite?
The anime, for, like, a shocking change for once. but I think, like, there is so much we can talk about with this and what this series means. And it's just, like, surrealist, absurdist, deconstructionist tale of prince and princesses and school academies and revolutionizing the world. But I think, like, why the anime specifically is, because when I watched it, I was really young, like 13, to be watching weird, absurdist anime. But there's such a focus on gender and sexuality in that anime. What specifically is really missing from the manga that I bring up is a romantic relationship between Anthy and Utena. That's also, yep, like, in the movie. And that is just such a compelling part. It's like one part he wrote more of in the show. That just, like, it means so much to me, and it's so compelling, and it's just gorgeous to play out. And it means a lot to me. Like, my own interpretations of gender and sexuality wouldn't be the same if I didn't watch this series unknowingly when I was 13. Yeah, that's great. Also, the soundtrack is, like, this operatic masterpiece. That's really cool.
It's difficult to find in, the original audio, but the dub is very easy to find. It's available on iTunes if anyone wants to purchase it legally. And I imagine that is how you watched it anyway the first time, huh?
No, I pirated it.
All right, so you had to say, okay, great, there you go. No, I mean, but you saw the dub, that you would have seen the dub first or the sub?
No, I saw the sub. I've never seen the dub, actually. I cannot comment on its quality.
But yeah, I mean, essentially it's about Utena Tenju, who is a teenage schoolgirl who, basically after being saved by a prince, earlier in her life, she becomes, enamored with the idea of herself becoming a prince too. And, she goes to an elite school where she has to, enter duels, like sword duels, sword fighting duels, to win the hand of the Rose Bride, who is also a student that goes to the school. And eventually it's about, like, you know, attaining the power to revolutionize the world, but that is, like, interpreted differently by the different characters. It was a really fun read. As someone that has only read it, I'm definitely inspired to watch it at some point. If not the series, then definitely the movie, which I found on YouTube, but only in the dub form. I really want to see what they're like with the original voice actors. But so I've read all of Revolutionary Girl Utena, the side stories, and the adaptation of Adolescence of Utena. Sorry, I keep saying Utena, even though it's Utena. But this year saw the English release of, to celebrate the anniversary, was it like the 25th anniversary? Of Revolutionary Girl Utena, we got Revolutionary Girl Utena After the Revolution, which is like a sequel to Utena. And I was expecting it to be like a direct sequel. We find out what happens after the finale of the original series. But in probably like what my favorite part of this book is, you get like the back matter is a comic strip detailing what the writer Chiho Sato came up with as she's talking to her editor, when her editor pitches her that to do some new Utena comics to celebrate the anniversary. And she talks about like she can't imagine and doesn't think anyone would want to see what Utena and Anthy would look like grown up. So instead we get a bunch of short stories from the side characters of the series and them having like no memories, I guess, of the first series, but them having weird interactions with Utena as adults. Is that all correct? Do you want to correct me on any of that?
No, this time, I already feel bad doing that before, but yes.
No, it's fine. I did get it wrong, damn it.
No, you got it right. You're fine. You're good.
Oh, thank God. Thank the Rose Bride herself.
I will continue this podcast now. It's fine.
So yeah, you get three short stories, one featuring the two male leads of Utena, which was a lot of fun. The story in the middle, about, I guess like at one point Utena's kind of like greatest rival, who is like she is a very skilled sword fighter. What's her name again?
Curly haired woman.
As if you don't know what her name is. Yeah, come on. You're the biggest Utena fan in the universe. Jury.
Oh, that's okay.
Is it Jury?
Yes, I believe so.
I'm Jury Arasugawa.
So Jury, when she cuts the little locket around her thing and then it falls on the ground and opens and shows her like lost love and the big music plays. It's all very, very meaningful.
Well, so that is referenced directly in her chapter. In this sequel comic, and I think her, in which like a rival basically comes, one of her rivals comes back, great rivals, like not just rival in terms of swordplay, but also rival in terms of romance, and so he comes back and they have some sword fighting, and then she's just gonna quit sword fighting. It's a roller coaster, but that was by far my favorite story. And then the final story is one that, and I know that like taboo subjects like incest are explored a lot more freely in Japanese writing and arts than, you know, most Western arts do. But it's a story about like how dare a brother reject the kisses on the mouth of his sister, like, and kind of paints him the bad guy for shutting her out. Yeah, I don't know. It was an odd tale, but like I know that like culturally those themes, it's weird.
Yeah, I think I only sort of liked the first story in this collection, because it's kind of weird, because being 25 years after and forgetting the original, it almost is kind of in its own way the fourth or fifth retelling of the same story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I love the first one because it's oh, who's our boys? Toga and
Saoji.
Yes. and that's like got heaps of the gay subtext there, and that one feels like it's got a pretty cool meta narrative on art surviving through time, as well as their own like individual stories from the original series, and that one really stuck. And then I found the second one kind of just like not so much repetitive, but kind of like a redux of just the show. And I was like, oh, okay. When I was expecting something else, I was like, yeah, it's fine. And the third one,
don't they play on what happened in the show with the locket in that one? He's like the guy who she duels against has engraved something in her locket when she looks at it later.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that was cool, but like it was still like it kind of just it like felt like the show, which I think when I reread it after realizing what the collection was, I enjoyed it a lot more. But that first time I was like, oh, this isn't quite sure, the sequel yeah. series I was expecting. And yeah, the third one, I think the manga always kind of had that weirder, more taboo edge to it with the sibling romance.
They don't go too hard on it in the original series, but they went very hard on it in this, it's kind of
like,
story.
I enjoyed the subtext of the, like, the gay subtext being there, but I didn't need the incestuous subtext becoming text. But then the last two pages were so beautiful. I cried seeing those characters again in that way. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. That was a bit weird, but I'm back again. It's fine.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, you're right. It does end with like it being a direct kind of like sequel to the life of Utena and Anthy. The highlight of the book, though, was because I thought you were talking about the last two pages where with the afterword where you have the
author
and the editor
more
talking
essays
about
writing processes. They're always the best.
They're always so great. I love like the like you know how much humility like. Japanese writers have about their works, like they admit that it's influential, but they also will be like, I don't know why. Yeah, it's great. I hope you like it is always what they say. So that's Revolutionary Girl Utena. Thank you very much for the gift of an incredible hardcover collection, Connor.
I'm very glad to gift it. I think there is something about that series's take on like subversion of gender and sexuality and tropes and like finding one's purpose. It's timeless, and I might even just have to throw my DVD collections down your way for you to give it a watch.
Oh, true, good idea. So I did say at the beginning of last year that I wanted to read more shoujo manga, which is manga for teenage girls, as opposed to shonen manga, which is manga for teenage boys. I've read The Goat. This is like the highest revered shoujo beat release, right?
Yeah, I can't remember her name. Is it like Takahashi, right?
As in like who we're going to talk about later, Rumiko Takahashi?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who wrote Maison Ikkoku and Mermaid Saga and many others. She's another goat.
Another goat.
Yeah, so I've done Utena. I've done one of the goats. And now Connor is going to tell me about two other shoujo manga that they've been reading that are not as well known. Did Shoujo Beat publish these ones?
No, this is pretty cool. This is a Seven Seas and then one that hasn't been released in English, but I'm here to spread the good word and hope they do.
Please do.
The first one is Kageki Shoujo, The Curtain Rises. This is a really fantastic release of a story that is basically the fictionalized version of the Takarezuka Revue, the all-female theater troupe that has existed in Japan for over 100 years now, kind of like a school of performing arts in which women get accepted into it's kind of a school, and then they live their whole lives as theater performers, and they've done so many productions of like Rose of Versailles, another classic shoujo piece, and stuff like Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet. They've got their own original content, and they put so many productions throughout every single year, and there's all these different classes, and some of them become their own celebrities, and it just like plays on free-to-air Japanese television as well as big theater events. And it's huge.
Wow, that's cool.
And it has never made its way outside of Japan because they just never digitize them. So you can sort of like buy DVDs if you know how to speak Japanese, but that's about it. But it's a really incredible piece of theater in the world. And this is basically about the Koku School of Performing Arts in this world, and about two young girls who like end up in the program ready to like live their lives. One of them is a young ex-idol who basically left the idol industry, sort of got kicked out for calling a fan a like creepy weirdo, and this young country hick who's really tall and really lanky, and they get accepted into the program, and they've kind of got to like and they've got to learn beside each other, and they're shoved in the same dorm. So it's this opposites attract kind of story of two young rising stars. And it's incredible in the way that it is. It feels so like attached to the history of shoujo manga, while also having such a strong theater edge from the Takarezuka, and just, you know, being a story about theater, and then having this really, not just emotional, but really sensitive heart in which you're following these young girls who become actors for different reasons and like learn to love the profession and have to like deal with their own weight. There's heaps of stuff about child sexual abuse, so content warnings for that, and like body issues that are covered as well, as they kind of learn to come together with their own identity and figure out why they're at their school and learn to build such a strong friendship with each other and seize their dreams. And so it's this incredibly strong personal stories mixed with like the joy of acting, and then just like super crazy spreads where you'll just see a production of Romeo and Juliet across a full page, and it's the most gorgeous thing. I was shocked by how much I enjoyed this. Like, I picked it up because I love the history of the Takarezuka, but I didn't know anything that the mangaka Kumiko Saki has ever done before. But yeah, this just like suddenly the character work is just so compelling, and it's so meaningful, and it's just gorgeous and cool.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So we should say that the first thing Connor ever recommended I watch or read was a series called Descending Stories, or in Japanese, Showa Genroku Rakugo Shinju, and that is a book about another book about like a theatrical a style of Japanese theater that kind of is more and more scarce post World War II. And it's kind of like the dying days of this movement in which like exclusively male performers perform like a one man show essentially, and it is one of the best things I've ever watched, with easily the best opening theme I've ever seen, it cemented Connor as someone to always listen to in terms of recommendations. And so without that recommendation, you may not be here recording this episode with me, Connor.
I'm back. But I'm back I bring to return to the brand, apparently.
I bring this up because, like, you know, I now have a taste for manga about Japanese theater. So it looks like I'll be having to give this one a shot. Now, tell me about the Kowloon Generic Romance.
This one's really cool. This is actually like an adult romance between two sort of like 30-year-old like middle class workers in the Kowloon walled city. Kowloon, I think that's in like in Hong Kong, just right before the turn of the 21st century. They work in like a real estate agency that, you know, doesn't have a working aircon, and they're kind of just like, and it's just make and buy. And I think it's just a really just sweet, sincere manga about getting on in life and still falling in love and kind of becoming the best version that you of yourself that you want to be. And I love seeing a romance manga focus on adult characters. You don't see that enough, and that brings like so many different things to the table with the history of the genre and just the writing itself. And this manga is gorgeous. I love the Jun Maezuki. She did another series called After the Rain, which is incredible, but that's like a really sort of beautiful and heavy series about overcoming trauma and living life. But this is just a gorgeous little piece of a bunch of people standing around smoking cigarettes, my favorite genre of manga, and falling in love and hanging out in the Kowloon Walled City, which is a gorgeous place to set a manga, I tell you what. Also, there's like this weird sort of sci-fi element where basically this weird alternate reality where they're building an artificial city in the sky, and it's literally never, like, they never go there. It's just in the background of some of the panels, and it's just really cool and weird. Very cool.
Awesome. That's great. So that's two newer shoujo manga for anyone to check out if they are interested. I'm going to go back to another GOAT because another collection that Viz put out at the end of last year is the first collection of Maison Ikkoku by Rumiko Takahashi, who is best known for Inuyasha, Mermaid Saga, and Urusei Yatsura, among others. I'd never read anything of hers except for a couple of chapters of Urusei Yatsura. I was excited to read this one because I know a lot of people love this. Is like their favorite one by her. Basically, it's about first we meet like a typical teenage boy who's living in an apartment with many other like eccentric guests. And he's studying hopelessly for exams. And it's obviously like something he's not good at because everyone in the building is constantly making fun of him for being terrible at work. He's also like a bit of a pervert. That's great because the biggest distraction of all time moves into his apartment as the new resident manager. Her name is Godai, and she becomes like this kind of like main distraction as he tries to like drum up the nerves to ask her out, tell her his feelings. It is like a mostly like, you know, like gag manga, but really, really well drawn, just like excellently put together and super funny. And it's funny, like, you know, I guess I associate so many, I guess what people would consider like, you know, reasons not to read manga, like the fact that there's always like a male pervert character, the fact that there's always like, you know, accidental groping, these things that like are traits that I groan when I see show up in shonen manga. But it's so funny seeing them show up in a manga written and drawn by a woman who is writing a manga for women. Like, it is just like, it is one of those cultural things that, like, you know, that is just inherently and always will be funny for Japanese readers, I guess. Perverts and groping.
And the fact that there would have been a whole generation that would have read this manga of like, and this would have been the new template for what to do next.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, great book, though. I'm midway through this first volume, and I think the second volume is on its way very soon. And I know Viz just released the first volume of Mermaid Saga as well. So that, if you are looking forward to beautiful collections of Rumiko Takahashi's work, Viz has got your back. Now, we've been talking a bit too hard on this girly shit, Connor.
I see how this is ordered.
we got to put the man back in manga. Tell me about Transformers the manga.
Oh god, hello, it's me.
You are a massive Transformers fan, the biggest one I know.
Yeah, stupidly some might say, but I am here. And Viz,
what's your budget, your Transformers budget per month? How many little robots do you bring into your life each month?
I did pretty well in 2020. I think I would have spent like maybe $200 across the whole year. And then the past like 2 months, I think I spent like $500 on the shit.
You know, it hasn't been 2 months of 2021. Sorry. Right? Your 2020 count is a bit off, I think.
just trying to get some self-respect back is all. Don't break it for me. But Viz decided to treat us last year with Transformers the manga, which is actually just like one of the coolest collections of history. What Transformers the manga is three volumes that collects every series of Transformers manga that was released in the 80s. So Japan, Japan and like Japan's company Takara Tomy is like side by side with Hasbro's owning the Transformers. You know, it's kind of like a joint ownership, so it's always been huge in Japan. And yeah, in the 80s, Masumi Kanata and artist Ban Megami drew a series of manga kind of like for each of the seasons of the TV show and sort of between every season. And there's about like 8 different 5 to 12 issue series that have never made their way out of Japan before in magazines in the 80s. And so Viz has just taken them all up and shoved them in these gorgeous hardcovers. And at the back is like heaps of extra material, like old posters and interviews, toy designs and stuff. And it's just 3 hardback volumes that give you this burst in nostalgia and is a kind of like history archiving is the word I've been looking for because I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
You just don't get like, there's all those cool manga of like X-Men and Spider-Man and Moon Knight that exists in Japan that we'll probably never see again because that's just lost to time. But here this is, and it feels like the best of dumb Transformers with the 80s with like this really real tasty giant robot feel that comes from the artist and the kind of like more ridiculous plots in the manga.
Yeah, that's great. I bought my son something similar because he's a massive Mario fan now. Pretty much like when he's got his iPad out, he's playing Mario Run. When he's got friends over, he's playing Mario Kart. And when he's alone, he's either like asking me to help him beat an Odyssey boss or like asking me repeatedly about, you know, old Mario games. So I picked up the first volume of the Super Mario Manga Mania, which collects various stories throughout the last few decades, written and drawn by Yukio Sawada,
who has been like the really it's like the really cool Mario, like he's kind of like squished down, he's got like this big mustache on his face sort of thing.
Oh yeah, it's like I mean we're so used to seeing such a regulated Mario across everything, you know, whether he's 3D or 2D now, he always has the same features, but he's so off model. He talks, he has like, so basically like whenever a new Mario game comes out, like this guy will just, you know, he's been doing these Mario comics since the 80s. This collection is a celebration of the 25th anniversary of his manga series starting. And it came out in, I think, 2017 and has finally been translated and released in the West now. And so you have in it stories from like Super Mario Sunshine era, Mario Galaxy, Paper Mario, all kinds of different eras of Mario. And so you have his take on all of the enemies and support characters of those games. And then it's like, you know, it's a really dumb, farty gag manga. But he basically selected all of his favorite stories, and one of them includes one that he wrote about while like thinking on his father's death and about how difficult it is to write a gag manga when you're filled with sadness. And he talks about like how his when his father died, actually he himself had to be admitted to hospital too because of the stress of his father's passing, and how he used humor to like get back on track with his life. My son like adores this manga. It's like, it's so fun and crazy. And then it has that sweet bit in it. And like, you know, for a kid that is like, you know, I mean, Mario, it doesn't really have that much lore. It just kind of has like, oh, you know, you should play this game. It is fun for a kid to kind of have all these stories, which is kind of what I grew up with too. There was the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, this appalling animated show, where you had like, you know, like Mario and Luigi trying to rescue Peach from Bowser, but like there was like a theme song and they talked with like, you know, it was voiced by a wrestler.
what's also
the live action movie too.
The theme song, it's like Here Come the Brothers or something like that.
Hooked on the Brothers. Yeah, it's great shit. This is a lot better than that, but it is cool to have like something for a kid who's getting into something to fill the gaps in their head with, I guess. I highly recommend this collection actually.
What's it called?
Viz putting out like it's called Super Mario Manga Mania.
Pick that up. That's cool.
Yeah, definitely recommended. What's next on our list? I believe it's Extremely for Boys. It is Mobile Suit Gundam, the plot to assassinate Gairen.
I'm going to be brave enough to say it. It's okay for women to like Gundam.
Well, in fact, I'm doing all I can to get my daughter into Gundam, because Gundam announced a collaboration with Hello Kitty last year, in which you get a model set that you can build a kitty and a Gundam, Or you can then take off the Gundam's head and put the kitty's head on it, and then a helmet that goes perfectly over the Hello Kitty's head with a complete bow and everything. It fucking rules. It's like the best toy ever. They just made a second edition of is it like a villain?
Yeah,
I don't know shit about Gundam.
The Zaku.
Zaku. So I got a pink Zaku Hello Kitty set for Tilly for her birthday later in the year. Zaku, whatever, dude. Who cares? But yeah, no, you're right. The only thing I care about is that Gundam is for girls too. And so, I'm talking about, manga for girls as a red blooded male. It don't matter. Anyone can read books.
This podcast Amen. Is so brave. So. But I'll jump into.
We're brave enough to read a book
that hasn't been released here, but I'll still talk about it. So Gundam's pretty huge here still, like model kits are everywhere. There's a surprisingly easy amount of places to buy the series and like watch it on like Anime Lab and stuff. And it's really accessible, but I got recommended a manga that hasn't been translated here. It is set in the Universal Century in the original timeline. It's the very first series, the great battle between Amuro and Char and the Federation and Earth and all that. And this is, I'd like to call, the Pluto
of Gundam. Oh, shit.
Yeah. So this is a detective story set in the final days of the Federation, kind of like the villains of the original story, but most of the Federation. I've been reading too much Poppy War. The Principality of Zion. One of the two.
You better pronounce it correctly. We only do correct pronunciations on this podcast.
Versus the Earth Federation. So these are like kind of like the bad guys, the ones who are trying to rise up, and you gotta shoot them down. But this is basically a detective story in the final days of the war where they're falling apart, you know, they're starting to realize they've lost the war, and someone is planning to assassinate the Giren, the leader of the Principality, and it comes down to like an ordinary, he's like a domestic security retired detective who gets pulled into this big conspiracy from the inside who are basically trying to kill Giren to try and restart the war with a different figurehead to lead it. And it is this incredible political play on all sides. It really examines, you know, this classic enemy with a lot of humanity and a lot of like really sort of gray area writing. A fantastic detective story, and I love that this, you know, big sci-fi story of giant robots. There's so much fun in just seeing the little technology of like their weird versions of a phone in the 80s. And that's just really good.
Yeah, awesome.
And then also there is unique suits, sort of the end of, and it ends in like a big explosive mech battles. And that's great too. But it's the plot to assassinate Giren. It's never been released here, but it's surprisingly recent. And I think like on the Gundam The Origin manga collections that we got over here, and Gundam Thunderbolt is still getting released. I pray for its release, and if it ever does, you got to keep an eye out for it. All them Gundam heads in the world. This one feels
good. I have the first two volumes of Gundam The Origin to read. I have previously tried to get into robot things when you told me to read Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, which I need to give another shot to. I enjoyed it. I just couldn't. I had no idea who anyone was because, like, there's way too many big red robots in that series. right now, Connor, Transformers or Gundam? If you have to pick one, who are you batting for?
What the fuck? What a
It's a brave question for a brave podcast.
I'd probably go Gundam because I gotta like sit you down and try and work you through the how to read More Than Meets the Eye, which is easier. I swear, if you get to like volume 3, the red robots don't look the same.
I got to like volume 6. I got pretty far.
Okay, maybe you're just lost. In which case, Gundam The Origin. I think you'll really get into it, and there's like so many other sequel series and side series to get into, and I think you'll just fucking eat up building dumb robots one day. Your office will just be filled with tiny drills.
Or the enormous ones. I saw them. They're pretty beautiful, like the big like $300 kits or whatever they're called, like the PG premium grade or something. Is that what they're That's some wild stuff. So that is means we can move on to where are we moving on to? I've lost out the window.
Strongest
the window's
man,
dead.
If we're talking about men, let's talk about the strongest.
Oh yep, strongest man. So we have talked about many manga series by Nobuyuki Fukumoto in the last year on the podcast, namely his. I've read Akagi and Ten, which are his two big mahjong series. Then he also wrote and still continues to write Kaiji, which is a show about gambling, which does have quite a few mahjong arcs in it itself. But like, it starts off of like this guy like permanently down on his luck, trying to turn the tables by entering high stakes gambling events, and he never really pulls himself out of the muck. And he's like, all of his series are very much like, you know, you'll have an entire chapter dedicated to one move of one mahjong tile, and like the various thoughts that go into the characters' minds as they try to make their decision. And some might say that sounds terrible, but I love it. And I've read a lot of it, more than 500 chapters of mahjong manga. But he has many other series, including ones that aren't about mahjong. And so I read one called Seikyo Densetsu Kurosawa, which stands for basically Strongest Man Kurosawa, or Legend of the Strongest Kurosawa. And it is about a like old loser, Kurosawa, who is like overweight and in a job that he hates, and he just feels like no one likes him because he's just so bad at making friends. And so it's him like basically trying to make friends, and in doing so accidentally like gets into a fight with a bunch of teenagers, and then becomes known as like a ruffian, basically a demon that shouldn't be fucked with. And it is a comedy manga. It's really funny, and it has that same level of like obsessing over one move of mahjong, except instead of gambling, it's like Kurosawa obsessing over every potential thing he could say or do in a social situation. So a really funny way to look at like, yeah, the stresses of trying to be social when you're an unsocial person. Really funny, like pretty tragic, but like comically tragic finale to it. I would definitely recommend this as like to someone who like as a newcomer to Nobuyuki Fukumoto's work. It's not translated officially in English yet, so you have to find some dodgy torrents, and they are exceptionally dodgy.
It's not written by Al, some man himself. Mr. Wayne Sand in the subway.
I think it is.
Oh, okay.
I think some of the later... Yeah, so one of the main translators of Nobuyuki Fukumoto's work, if you search hard enough, you'll find accounts from him about quitting the translating game because it's against God, and it summons demons, and also Pokemon are demons.
There's an incredible HeyFam episode on it, but I can't remember which one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the greatest saga of 2020, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, very early in the year last year, I kind of documented my findings, because every time I go down one of these rabbit holes of fandoms, I always uncover so much more. But yeah, Strongest Legend Kurosawa, I think, it's relatively short. It's like 60 chapters, and it's pretty funny and relatable throughout. Give it a shot if you want to read some dodgy torrents. Just before we move on, I should say I've been trying to get through what is kind of revered as one of the best Shonen Jump series of all time. I'm having a lot of trouble with it because it is one of the most surprisingly dense comics that I've ever read. It rivals Chris Claremont's X-Men run, and also you have that similar thing where you kind of like you come into it with like so much you know writing on it of like, you know, oh, this is like beloved, and it was almost like a game changer when it first came out, and then you read it and like I'm enjoying it more than I can't get into Claremont X-Men. I never have been able to. I understand that he's responsible for so many amazing ideas in X-Men, but his writing style where you learn, and I love that this is coming off the back of me saying how much I love reading manga where they, you know, describe every thought process when they, you know, move one tile of mahjong. But there's something so ridiculous about that. It's almost a parody of Claremont's writing to me. Whereas, yeah, so I've been trying to read, oh God, the name has escaped me now. What have I been trying to read, Connor? the Shonen Jump series with the Death Note. I've been reading
Yes, I do remember you talking about that, yeah.
And I'm like 70 chapters into an 108 chapter series, and it is so... I just find it so slow and so so dense. Have you read the entirety of it?
I've watched it. And the thing I try to do is try to rewatch every anime I watched when I was like 13. Because I watched a lot then, but I do not trust myself. And this one is I haven't touched since. So I can only believe everything you said about it.
Yeah, look, there are moments of it where it is excellent, but then it will just suddenly be so slow. And you have like two characters who are very, very crafty, trying to outcraft each other. And one of them was my favorite character. He's not in it anymore. And instead we have two children who I don't like. You mentioned, it sucks from this point forward. So I'm not very enthused to get through it, but I am going to force myself. I think that's going to be in order to reward myself with all the shoujo manga that I have to get through. I have to finish Death Note.
The ending felt good.
But enough about...
That's all that I remember.
What's that, sorry?
The ending felt good, so you might be rewarded.
Okay, cool. And I know that they did like a chapter like last year as well. That was incredible, yeah. So I'm kind of excited to see what that is. Is it? Yeah, right, cool. So let's get to My Broken Mariko, which is a series that you've been reading.
Yeah, this is a single volume release. Let me pull up the... by Waka Hirako. I want to say that's her name. This is... a single volume release. Yen Press delivered it to us in an incredible hardcover, and it is a super personal, really heavy story about her name's Tomoyo is the main character. I shouldn't confuse that. Who's only and best friend Mariko was abused by her father practically throughout her whole life. And then one day, Tomoyo wakes up to find... just hears on the news, actually, that her best friend has killed herself. And she is distressed and heartbroken. And so she breaks into the household of this horrible father, steals her ashes, and then takes her on a road trip because they recalled once saying that one day they'll definitely... get to share a day at the beach, or a conversation where if you could go anywhere, where would you go? And from there, it's kind of like this really intimate story where Tomoyo tries to piece together her life now and reflect on everything and try to find some meaning now that like her best friend is gone. And that is like, it is such an intense subject matter, and it does not shy away from any of it. It's all manner of kind of like abuse is shown there in that book as well, but it is such a perfectly crafted book that is so intimate and I think so cathartic that it is a book of loss, but it is a book about, you know, finding a way to keep on and living for the living and living for those who aren't, and, you know, kind of like a colorful cast that you meet along the way that make your life. And, you know, I finished it and there are tear stains on that page from when I finished it because it's just so beautiful. But so worthwhile, and it's
how many books with tear stains on their pages do you have in your collection? and are they worth more?
Oh, one day when I get big enough, I'll sell them. I'm pretty sure it'll matter then, but a lot. But yeah, I think like it's easily one of the best books I think I've read. The art as well is obviously like a manga has a manga art style, but nothing looks like Hirako's interpretation of the human body and anatomy and facial expression, which tells so much of the story. And what's really fantastic about this collection is, you know, it's kind of like, it's a single volume release, but at the back is a little short one shot she did called Yisuka. I'm definitely mispronouncing that, but it is the story of like the end of the 20th century, a bounty hunter making his way across the American desert with a Native American and their kind of like relationship, which is surprisingly really sensitive and respectful, which you can't even say that about a lot of stories about Native Americans. But I think like that's an incredible story that has like so, you know, away from the original subject matter of the book that it just confirms that I think this is an incredible creator, and I hope we get every single story she's ever done published here in the West. But this book especially is, it's hard to call it like a must read, but if that is something that appeals to you, I like highly encourage you to read it. It is really something special.
Great. And then finally, a book that you have been trying to get me to read for a long while, Land of the Lustrous.
You'll have to trust me here. This is okay. My favorite manga of all time, without question.
Fuck.
Full stop. All right. Nothing. Hold the phone. Nothing is like the book.
Better than Death Note? Better than Monster Musume?
Better than...
I was in Kinokuniya the other day, and I found they have paper craft of Monster Musume, which is a
fantastic.
An unbelievably horny manga and anime series about a dude who has like girls who are like...
I can't remember what he's like leaving with them in his apartment, or he has to like fuck them to save the world, but it's something like that.
No, he's not allowed to fuck.
Oh, okay.
Them. There's someone. Classic. But so they're animal. They're like animal women. So there's like a centaur with like enormous rack.
A mermaid.
And there's like a mermaid. Snake. There's like a snake, but there's also a mermaid.
Oh.
And there's a bird woman who is also like you know, like meant to look like a child, I guess, which
Big
is you know, very, very great.
Spider.
There's a spider, and they all try and fuck him, and he's not allowed to fuck them, or else he'll get arrested and go to jail. And also, the government official who's not allowed to, who's making sure he doesn't fuck them also wants to fuck him. So very, very great story. But if you want to make papercraft, there exists a book of papercraft for Monster Musume.
Is it like a specific part for like the tits, or do you have to like poke like a stick through the back of one of the pieces of paper to push it
no,
out.
No, they provide extra paper so you can make those geometric shapes as big as you need to.
Fantastic. I don't know where to go from here. What's the point? Nothing will beat that. I wish I had a Kinokuniya here. I want to experience weird.
I'm looking it up now so I can... Yes, like I'm going to make the image for the episode. Papercraft of Monster Musume. Perfect. Excellent stuff. But yeah, sorry, Land of the Lustrous, your favorite manga of all time. This is exciting. Oh, yep, there's some tributes to these paper crafts if you look hard enough. Excellent.
Anyway, my favorite manga of all time by Haruka Ichikawa is Land of the Lustrous, this strange tale of gem-like creatures living on a weird version of Earth where... they're constantly hunted down by Buddhist creatures who live on the moon to turn them into jewelry. And they exist on a hardness scale where it's like diamonds are up the top as a 10 and phospholite is down the bottom as like a 3.5. So they're weak and they can't help fight to protect this world from the weird lunarians, or what the crazy Buddhist creatures are called. And from there is one of like the most incredible stories of perseverance, resilience, learning to fight to change yourself, and what it means to try and change yourself, as comes like a wider comment on the way sort of society pushes you to be one sort of thing, and how you break to fit inside that, and how you've got to try and break again to fit out of that, and so many more themes that become more apparent, like even halfway through the series, that is also about these gorgeous, like, gorgeously designed gem-like creatures fighting against these crazy Buddhist figures and these creatures in the sea, and what is the strange history of this world, and what does that mean for these characters, that just becomes a story like across every kind of fiction you can imagine that I've just not experienced anywhere else. And there is such an incredible use of the black and white texture of drawing in this book, the way that shadows and pages are filtered between black and white, and mm-hmm. that duality and that difference that works so well to tell this story. It's such a strange series to sell, but you just gotta trust me here.
Okay, I trust you. You've earned it.
Fantastic.
I'll get into it. Okay, maybe before we record next time, I'll have read Land of the Lustrous.
Yes, I brought that up, I should say, because there are 10 volumes out, the 11th comes out this year, and there are 95 chapters in Japan. The latest chapter, 95, just came out, and it's on hiatus for a bit, so there's no better time to get caught up than during hiatus, because I should also mention, this book is also heart-crushingly depressing.
Great.
Every, like, in the past 20 chapters, just leave an aching void in my heart, where it becomes all that I think about until the next chapter is released, and then it's all I think about again. My phone's background is fan art of this series. I've seen the anime like 3 times as well, because it is this incredible 3D animated style that takes what makes this original series a story that can only be told in manga and tells it the only way you can in an anime. And it really do be something special.
That's great. Okay, cool. All right, I've added it to the list. It's going right up there. I have a lot of manga that I wanted to get through this year. I can tick off Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant. That's great. There we go. I wanted to read... Here, I'll just read through a few. I wanted to read Beck, Kodansha book. I wanted to read... I'm going to choose some random ones that I want to read. School Rumble.
Oh, yeah.
Vagabond. Haikyuu. Pano Graffiti.
What is that?
And I don't know what that one is, but it's on my list. Who knows when I put it there? Pano Graffiti. Peruse Graffiti. Oh, it's what the girl who does Beastars did before Beastars.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's on my list, but I will put... What's it called again?
Land of the Lustrous.
Land of the Lustrous. Okay, it's at the top. Top of the list, baby.
Will he read Monster Musume before the year is out?
So we got one more to talk about. Next time we talk, I want to talk about that, and also we need to finally talk about Asadora, the Naoki Urasawa book. But the first volume of that comes out very soon in the West.
Siobhan just posted wait for that to come Instagram out. Story this morning, but
it's out.
She has a volume in her hand. Damn. I'm like, oh my god! And she was like, yep, get ready.
Okay,
we're waiting for chapter 29. It's been like 6 months. Maybe the last chapter.
Siobhan and I can talk about the first volume of that, because I'm very excited to hear what she thinks of it, because I think it's one of the best series that Urasawa, who's done Monster and Pluto and 20th Century Boys, I think is one of my favorites of his, and shows how much he's grown, like going from Monster, reading the female characters in that, to then reading his take on female characters in Asadora is just night and day. So that's a brilliant one. I read A Trail of Blood. Since we last recorded, I read it all in one day. It's called Chi no Wadachi in Japan, and it's like a horror manga by Oshimi Shuzo. Have you read that before?
Yes.
Now we've talked a lot of horror manga on the podcast before, namely a lot of Junji Ito books. This is a very different type of horror. This is an extremely personal horror about a relationship between a boy and his mother. His mother in the first chapter pushes his cousin off a cliff, and then he has to lie to protect his mother, but his mother is fucking weird and totally scary and very, very strange, and it's a very uneasy, unnerving manga to read, but it's also intensely readable. You can just burn through it very fast, and I did.
It's super
psychic. Do you keep up with that one?
Yes. I should pick up that release, actually. It looks super good. My favorite of his...
Yeah, there's 3 volumes. There's 3 volumes out now in the West, if you want to read it. Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite story of his is, like, Flowers of Evil, which is the most, like, incredible depiction of puberty and strange, complex relationships and becoming who you are. And that'll always stick with me. I actually haven't caught up on A Trail of Blood. I hear where that story has gone with the crazy abusive mother, it just gets more insane. But
yeah, totally. You know what, it's actually called Blood on the Tracks officially.
Yeah, that's right. A Trail of Blood is just what the translators called it, so I got like a reputation with that, I think, before Vertical picked it up, maybe.
Blood on the Tracks manga, let's find out. It was
a song by Bob Dylan.
It's been published by... It's a race to find out who published it. It's temporarily out of stock everywhere.
Cool. But it's by Vertical.
There you go, Vertical. You did it. But yeah, you can get it in the West now, provided it hasn't sold out. I think it's an immensely, like, you know, kind of like cult following online. But it's a good read, an easy one, but a good one. Connor, we did it. We made it through another brilliant episode of Serious Manga.
The only podcast guaranteed to make you say, hey, that was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, no other podcast can make you do that. Connor, if you want to hear more of them, you can. It is a podcast called Wine Mums. I haven't been on it yet, and it's one of the true travesties of the world. I think Denim, your co-host, hates me, I guess, even though he sent me for free his PlayStation VR Move controllers. Shit. Just for free.
So,
I mean, a nice thing to do for someone that hates me.
It just reminds me that I was supposed to ask you maybe a few weeks ago. We put up our latest episode in that we literally like directly address asking you on the podcast, and then I forgot to.
And you were like, no, I will not. I'll never ask.
I think Denim calls you a cunt on it, but it's Christ. Only love. Because we want to do a big
loving,
One Piece
loving term
podcast
ever.
There. All 1,000
Oh, perfect.
Chapters.
Has he caught up?
He read a chapter 1,000 with us.
Okay, that's very exciting. All right, well, let's do that. Go check out.
Go
check out Wine Mums. What was your most recent episode about?
That was our best of the
something
year.
Good and then also something bad.
The something good is the subject matter. The something bad is the podcast itself. But we'd be happy to have you.
I can't wait. Let's go check that out. If you want to check out Serious Issues, we are online. Our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. And we are on Facebook and Twitter and even Tumblr. Go find us. If you want to find me, I'm at LevDog, LevDawg. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and all those. My other podcasts are Hey Fam and All the Small Games. If you want to hear me talk about video games and movies and cartoons, that is the place to do that. Both of those places. Thank you so much to Connor, and thank you for listening. We appreciate it, and we'll see you hopefully very soon with Siobhan and Connor. Not too far after that.
Thanks,
provided
we
they
love
say
you.
Yes again. Bye bye.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.